they have an ordinance preventing sleeping to get people out of their yards. So why don't we just turn this on the issue on its head? We need to extend these lines that you made in little areas. Just line out the whole thing. Let's start over. and deal with the issues that we've got. The ordinance we have is not dealing with it. Let's really look at the individual issues that have been listed that the has been off and deal with those. Without this ordinance and all of this human rights issue stuff going on, we just get rid of the human rights issue thing and start over. Just delete 6.36 from the city municipal code. Thanks.
Of course, Tom Shaver at the time was the coordinator of SCAN, the Santa Cruz Action Network, which had voted repeatedly to ask that at least the sleeping ban sections of the camping ban be repealed. And SCAN also endorsed all the candidates, I think with the exception of Hernandez, who were on the council at that time, although the council has ignored SCAN's concerns about the sleeping ban. SCAN always likes to get together folks around these issues, and then of course when the politicians are able to successfully use SCAN to get elected, they then ignore the key issues and proceed to do what they want. That's been the history of SCAN. That's one of the reasons SCAN has shrunk. Shaver is now, of course, an aide to Scott Kennedy and has been working with the Santa Cruz Service Corps to put together something, a program to be of assistance to not just Camp Paradise, but other people. And he was cut off at the neck last week at the City Council when they passed an amendment to the camping ordinance, which simply said that people who are under a group of under 15 people for 2 weeks or less, provided they meet 8 strenuous conditions, might get a permit from the Parks and Rec Department director if they're engaging in work in exchange for camp. I mean, it's impossibly stringent, has nothing to do with human right to sleep, and doesn't deal with the Camp Paradise issue or return on that. But Shaver has been continuing to struggle in his own way with this issue, although it sounded like he was calling for the abolition of the entire camping ban, saying strike the ban and start over, which is true. You need to have some regulation of camping, surely, but you don't need the law we have now, and rewriting the law, starting over, would be good. And that's what he's asking for. And a lot of us were asking for less. We were just asking that you strike the sleeping sections of the camping ordinance and the blanket ban section. Let's continue listening to this debate, February 23rd, 1999. It's actually a series of public comments prior to the council's debate, which eventually produced a few minor changes. What they produced were 3 days in a driveway. They produced a lowering of the fine to $54 from the $162, which it used to be for falling asleep outside or covering up with blankets or setting up an established campsite. It reduced it from a misdemeanor to an infraction. It said if the winter armory shelter is full, then tickets will be given, but then dismissed. So you get to be harassed and woken up and terrified and told to move on to nowhere, but then later on you can get them dismissed during those winter months when the armory is full. But since the armory now requires picture ID, and a lot of folks don't use it, it's rarely full. It doesn't mean, however, that most people have access to usable shelter. Let's hear more of this debate on the camping ban and the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance.
Good evening, my name is Ed Porter. I want to commend all you.
This is Ed Porter, who's now a council member.
Unlike some of the speakers much earlier in the evening, I think that regardless of what position you take on this, that the fact that you're doing this work is out of good conscience, out of a sense of morality, and a sense that something needs to be done. I was talking to the former mayor back there a few minutes ago, and she said, well, if both sides are opposing what you're doing, you must be doing something right. And I think that's probably true. That was a very nice thing for her to say. I want to talk first about the people, downtown neighbors and chamber, who are opposing what you're doing. And I think these are rather modest changes. I don't think the whole as they talk about it, is going to collapse because of these changes. And I think something that I've always advocated is that this is a little tinkering with the system because you perceive there's been some injustice and that an improvement can be made.
I don't think it's appropriate for people to be blocking folks' viewing points. We're sitting there perfectly fine with the people, but they moved up to make a point. It's totally out of line, and they should be moved somewhere where they're not blocking people.
Anybody object?
Now, what happened here was a man came up with a bunch of blankets and put them down so that people could see them and use them. And some folks were wrapped up in blankets as protest at this meeting. That was one of the forms of protest used. People would wrap up in blankets at these council meetings. And Michael Rotkin, that's who's objecting, this says that the public is being blocked from seeing his shining visage by these blankets. And you hear my voice from the side saying, does anybody object? And Catherine Byers, who's chairing the meeting and who's the mayor at the time, says, that's not the point. Well, he asks, can you remove those blankets? And one thing you'll notice at this meeting is there's a dialogue that goes on between the mayor and the public a lot. I mean, it's not, I didn't have a lot of positive things to say about Catherine Byers at this time, but I had not seen the kind of repression that followed in the form of Mayor Fitzmaurice, Mayor Sugar, and now Mayor Crone, where you have this mentality that if anybody does anything out of line, puts a tape recorder near the mic, they can be ordered to leave the chamber. Catherine Byers didn't do this, nor did previous mayors. There were mayors who did do this, but there was a substantially more liberal process at city council in terms of the understanding the public's rights in the situation. I mean, I don't want to say it wasn't just perfect, but it wasn't particularly good in other ways. But things have gotten worse. You're hearing now again a speech by Ed Porter interrupted by Mike Rotkin because he didn't like a guy who set down a bunch of blankets and in essence inviting people to take them.
Would you mind just putting them down so we can see? Thanks.
Thanks
a lot.
Thanks.
Man, I can't see the blank.
I have to also say that probably the centerpiece of what's proposed here, of having a task force to identify how some of those things, maybe many of those things on the list that Councilmember Crone read off, is the real work that has been done. That obviously there needs to be a place where people can go so that we can say, if you need a place to sleep, that's the place where you have to go. There has to be some kind of a drive-in facility and some kind of sort of a place for people to go who don't have a place to sleep. I have a tendency to wonder, however, if someone has been in this town for probably somewhere around 20 years opposing the actions of those council members who continually trying to do something for the homeless, how that could be credible. I just don't have a clue. And I wonder if some of the young people here tonight, if they could imagine that they're still going to be doing this in 20 years with the same message that everything our friends do are wrong and we try to do something for the homeless. I don't see how it's a logical or credible position. I commend the council for trying to take some actions that are reasonable, and I hope you go ahead with this. I would point out that you can tinker with these things every meeting that you have. You can have another reading and another reading as often as you need to get the right balance. And so I commend you and ask you to move forward.
But of course, there is no place for people to park and no place for people to sleep. And Ed Porter is now on the council and has never proposed one in his whole year on the council. He's talked about investigating a site for Camp Paradise, actually several sites, but he has not required the staff to come back with those reports, which were ordered on October 23rd and completed on November 19th. Here he is talking in February of 1999, and even here you can hear him defending Catherine Byers and others on the council who essentially are going to be doing very little to change the camping ban, but they're making these minor changes, which even these are opposed tooth and nail by some of the conservative business interests and a few of the residents downtown. Continuing this oral communications public hearing.
Hello, my name is Rachel Condon, and I'm a member of the local chapter of Amnesty International on the Santa Cruz Coalition of Free Media Ujamal. The coalition is as a group in favor of lifting the sleeping ban. Poverty is not a crime. Sleep is not a crime. Criminalizing the poor for being poor is a crime. The sleeping ban is just another way of suppressing those who do not or cannot fit the mold of mainstream America. The ban is classist and a violation of basic human rights. There are no facts to support the notion that with legalizing of sleep, that homeless people would be more likely to commit crimes such as kidnapping children. Unfortunately, there are criminals out there who prey on children, and parents must be vigilant to protect their children. But targeting homeless people is not the answer to this. There are bad elements in every segment of our society. People who commit crimes like these could be rich, could be poor, could be a homeowner, could be homeless, could be a cop, could be a priest, a judge, a relative. Addressing homelessness in sleep is not the same as addressing crimes like kidnappings. I repeat, homeless people are not more likely to commit such crimes. If you see someone committing a crime outside your home, call the police, but do not attack people for sleeping. Sleep is not a crime, it's a basic need and right. I am not homeless, but I have been several times in the past. I have lived in my vehicle, and I held down a job. I did not rely on public assistance, and I did not break any laws other than sleeping, the sleeping law. I was clean, quiet, and respectful. I knew and know many homeless people exactly like myself. Of the people I know, most received several tickets after being awoken in the middle of the night. Usually these people are sleeping in the industrial areas near natural bridges and were parked nowhere near homes. From my experience, most homeless people are clean, respectful of others, and are not criminals. Unfortunately, they do not get the attention that the few troublemakers get. I repeat, criminalizing homelessness and sleep is wrong. Address real crimes, and I feel that there should be, most areas of the city should be open for sleeping, especially in industrial areas and near parks. Thank you.
And here's a plug. I believe you can hear this same woman speaking on free radio later today. There's a show on Sunday, Cut Your Hair and Get a Fucking Job, with Old Lady Scar Arms and Baby Greaser James. And that same prophetic voice can be caught on free radio. Continuing with the public hearing.
Community Action Board. I'm Shelter Project Director there. I often thought that I love our Constitution. I have ever since I became aware of it. And recently, it was interesting. I now love another country's Constitution more. And it was ironic, the choice of that Constitution, because this country took our Constitution when they wrote their Constitution, and then looked at what did we leave out and put those in, like the Equal Rights Amendment for women, like making certain that people weren't discriminated against because of their sexual orientation, and a right to housing. And that was South Africa, of all places. I mean, if I had thought that 10 years ago, I would have immediately discounted it as science fiction. But that's the truth that exists. And when we think about our long-term goals, I know that we are on the same path, because I've talked with all of you. I know that you would support a constitutional amendment to a right to housing. But we're not there yet. And while we work on these long-term issues, and we at CAB really do support an ongoing task force, or maybe even elevating it to the level of a commission, to look at the long-term solutions and to look at short-term solutions, we still have the very real fear in our community that I think is blocking you from being able to make the decisions that you might want to make. That there is a misconception on the part of even compassionate and progressive peoples that there is a greater criminality among poor or homeless people, that if we somehow are more compassionate we will attract large numbers. And some of you over the past weeks and months have asked me to see if I could find any data that would give us some kind of a clue as to whether or not that was true. And the data that is there, the data that I was able to find, does not in any way indicate that there is a magnet effect. If you are more compassionate, poor people don't come running to you. If anything, the studies, the existent data, which is available to all of you now, because we made it available to the task force, shows that poor people don't migrate as much as any of us had thought previously. And they certainly don't migrate for better welfare benefits or more shelter spaces. They don't. There is no study, and I would challenge anyone who has one to bring it so that we could see it. There is no study that shows that people will flock to a more compassionate community. There isn't any.
Time's up.
But I do have to admit there is a small regional magnet effect to a compassionate community. I will acknowledge it. And I think that's appropriate. So my hope is that you'll make the right decisions at some point in the future rather than be forced to by a court.
Yeah.
All right.
And that was Paul Brindell, who then and now heads the shelter project of the Community Action Board, which has for 7 or 8 years opposed the entire camping ban, not just the sleeping ban sections, but the entire ban itself, given the shelter crisis in Santa Cruz that the City Council itself has 3 times declared 3 concurrent shelter crisis emergency resolutions, written into the very mission statement of the city, as I understand it, in 1998, if I have that right. Brindell is... He later was appointed to the homeless issues task force, which was again another one of these feel-good showcase groups rather than do anything substantive, like even put in porta potties and facilities in the industrial zones where homeless people are camping now and were camping then. They paid money for another task force. And they did nothing. And, of course, the task force's recommendations, which Paul Brindell contributed to, were completely ignored, with the exception of a police officer, Officer Seeley, who became the Homeless Resource Center, Homeless Services police officer, and who required notoriety for continuing to harass sleepers around Camp Paradise. Continuing with the February 23, 1999, public hearing on the camping ordinance changes, minor changes, but they brought out a showing of sentiment from the community that was major.
My name is Donald Burke, and I'm here to urge you to remove all references to sleeping from the camping ordinance. Like the vagrancy ordinances that preceded it across this country in the 50s and 60s before they were thrown out by the courts, the sleeping ban is a catch-all regulation designed to control a wide range of any social or disturbing activities which are unrelated to the specific offense cited. The sleeping ban gives the police the flexibility to cite individuals for this clear and easily defined infraction when they suspect other crimes for which they have insufficient proof. These other crimes are usually difficult to control using existing misdemeanor statutes, but these crimes are what offend and threaten the public, not sleeping. I would like to quote a short statement from the task force report that you read before, but concerns of the citizenry regarding camping / sleeping are focused more on the behavioral problems of some campers than on the physical act of sleeping. Unacceptable behaviors, including all the things we've seen heard of before, are included. While there are separate code provisions to deal with these behaviors, their enforcement requires actual police observation and/or considerably greater involvement by citizen complainants. And that's the core of it. And there you have it. Considerably greater involvement by citizen complainants. In other words, the convenience of the sleeping ban is what is driving this dangerous erosion of personal freedom. These criminal and antisocial activities have absolutely nothing to do with sleeping or the needs of the homeless. They have to do with recklessly simplified solutions to complex problems. You don't need to be soft on crime to be rational about a sleeping ban. If you want to get tough on real threats to quality and life and public safety, double the fines for littering, quadruple the fines for littering. strictly enforce noise ordinances. Let be known that the Santa Cruz police will be down on you like a ton of bricks if you engage in behavior or assault. Public drunkenness and use of illegal drugs is already illegal. Enforce the laws that already exist. We cannot expect to anonymously call 911, report a crime we've witnessed, and watch hidden behind our curtains while the police use the sleeping van as the tool for controlling unrelated crimes that they don't witness. If the police ask a citizen to assist them by signing a complaint, that citizen needs to cooperate, even if cooperation is inconvenient or unpleasant. We cannot substitute this fuzzy-headed ordinance for citizen involvement in policing their own communities. The job of the city council is not to make it easy for residents to call a city service every time they have a gripe with something going on in their neighborhood, like calling the police when your neighbor's stereo is too loud because it's too much of a hassle, or too threatening to actually go out and speak to the neighbor yourself, whether they live in a house or a car. This paranoia is so extreme, it's become self-destructive to our entire community. I believe we need to find ways to support citizen involvement in neighborhood activities that go beyond dialing a phone, leaving a complaint, and relying on a sleeping van of all the absurd bureaucratic instructions to deliver us from fear of our own neighbors. Thank you.
And that is really encouraging to hear. That the man is, of course, Don Burke. Don is a member of the steering committee of SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network. And he is also one of the, I think he's a paid aide of council member, now Mayor Crone. He's also the tallest man in the room, if you look around on these council meetings, so you'll know who he is. He spoke eloquently about the sleeping ban, but unfortunately he can't get his council member to introduce anything. None of the resolutions that were brought up at the last council session here in January have anything to do with the sleeping ban in terms of the right of the majority of homeless people to sleep legally somewhere during the night. They have nothing at all to do with it. In fact, Crone and Sugar, once the two great liberals on the city council, at this time when you hear this tape, they were the liberals, this is 3 years ago, 1999, the last council meeting, were trying to shut people down who talked about the sleeping ban, claiming it wasn't relevant to their amendments. It is, in fact, relevant because you can talk about what the amendments don't do and should do. And that's a legitimate part of the debate. But Crone and Sugar not only won't talk about the sleeping ban, but they want to muzzle other people who do. It is really a sad deterioration. But Don Burke had quite a statement there. I only wish he'd stand up and say it again. I wonder if he would. I think he's now closely associated with someone who has made it a political no-no, but we'll see. Don, call in.
Good evening, I'm Scott Graham, and I'm speaking as an individual this evening. And I'd just like to start off by saying that homelessness is really a national shame. If anybody's ever been to Western Europe, there really isn't any homeless people. I know from being in Germany, even the lowest drunks that are laying in the gutter aren't carted off to jail. They're carted off to some place to sleep at night because they have a problem. They're an alcoholic, but there's actually another problem that caused them to become an alcoholic in the first place. And it's the same thing with drug addicts. Drug addicts, most of them have some other problem, whether it's a mental problem, a physical problem, whatever the problem is. They have another problem that leads them to becoming drug addicts. Making them a criminal for being homeless isn't really solving their root problem. And there seems to be a lot of mass hysteria about what the effects of doing anything to this law will do. And I just think that the city council is going to have to proceed slowly to keep the mass hysteria down. We're going to have to take this in small steps so that the masses don't say, oh no, all hell's going to break loose. Because, you know, maybe if you do one step and nothing bad happens, then you can take another step, and then if nothing bad happens, you can keep on doing things to help the homeless situation. But one of the problems with this homeless thing is that a lot of people try to lump them all together as being one group of people. They're not. They're just as different as, say, your neighborhood. Everybody in your neighborhood is a different person. They have different likes, they do different things. And the homeless population is made up of a lot of different people. There's the Jack Kerouac Dharma Bumps people that are just out there. They're the people that chose to be homeless. They're not really even homeless. They're gypsies. They're out traveling. They're in town here for a while and they leave. And then there's the truly needy, people that don't want to be homeless, the people that did have homes and because of circumstances beyond their controls, they no longer have homes. Then you have Vietnam veterans that have a multitude of problems that were caused by the war, or maybe problems they had before the war. And then there's all sorts of people with mental and physical handicaps that need help, and they're out there on the streets also. And there seems to be some kind of need for a campground and also a car park, some place where people can park their vehicles legally and sleep in them, where they're not going to be in somebody's neighborhood. And if they do come into a neighborhood, the neighbors can go put a notice on their car or call the police and have the police tell them, there's a legal place for you to park. You don't have to park in front of my house. There's plenty of laws. There's a lot of laws to control people's behavior, and we don't need to tell people they can't sleep. Thank you.
And that was activist Scott Graham. That's the man we're hoping we can drag into the studio later in the show, but I don't know if we can. I haven't heard back from him. Of course, his points are as eloquent and ignored as usual by the City Council. But continuing, again, this is a three-year-old discussion which is as timeless and fresh as if it were yesterday, and it's as discouraging to hear that the same kinds of criticisms apply as intensely now as they ever did, in fact more so, as we hit the new recession and the new herd of homeless folks is going to hit us.
Hi, I'm Becky Johnson. It is with profound disappointment that I address the council tonight. I had hoped to be celebrating the end of the sleeping ban tonight, but instead, this heinous law, which turns homeless people into criminals nightly for the simple acts of sleeping and covering up with blankets to insulate against the chill of the night, will remain. Since Mayor Byers and the three new council members appear to support these purely cosmetic changes, the task force has brought us, I know all is lost. You will simply wash your hands of the matter, move on to less sticky issues, and whenever anyone criticizes you, we will say, we gave it our best shot. We had vast public input. We heard the community. This is the best we can do for now. But what did the community tell you at the nearly 20 task force meetings? Didn't you hear homeless people telling you of the indignity the sleeping ban causes them? The fear and alienation it causes? Didn't you learn of the undue burden citations, arrests, fines, and warrants cause homeless people who are struggling with few resources to get their lives back together? Didn't a series of trusted experts describe for you the huge gap existing between existing shelter options and the need for that shelter? Didn't you learn from those who have so much to fear of what would happen if we allowed homeless people to sleep at night somewhere in the city of Santa Cruz, that they were really afraid of burglars, molesters, child molesters, mashers, litterers, public defecators, public urinators, vandals, trespassers, drunken disorderlists, and people using the parking spaces that they wanted to use? No one complained of the menace of sleeping. No one feared the horror of someone else staying warm at night. Not once did you hear that. Catherine, when we asked you where the homeless can sleep, you said, well, there's really nowhere. That's not good enough. You have both the obligation and the ability to find somewhere. Let me tell you where. For those living in vehicles, in addition to the 3 cars per church, the proposed 2 cars per business, and 1 car per residence, sleeping should be legalized in the 2 industrial sections of Santa Cruz, in parking spaces adjacent to parks, in commercial districts at night, which are virtually vacant at night, in parking structure number 10 on Front Street, in the downtown city parking lots at night only. Those without cars can sleep in Sycamore Grove, in the big field behind Costco, along the bench lands, in buildings such as the Coast Bank at Front and Soquel, and the former movie theater on Front Street, both of which have been empty for months, Box Pine Grove Campground on Golf Club Drive. As a city, we must decide if our homeless policy is to give a helping hand or give the homeless a boot.
Thank you, Kenza.
So far, one more sentence. So far, all we've seen is the boot. The task force recommendations merely show a switch of shoe wear from steel-toed boots to overpriced Nikes.
And that was the eloquent writer and activist Becky Johnson. She's, of course, giving the specifics to the council about where people can sleep. She did the same for the next year with the Homeless Issues Task Force, and then actually risked jail for her views at the Coffee Klatch 3 when she was enjoined from protesting by Fitzmaurice at the city council. I should say the city council offices. And recently, she's been threatened with arrest under rulings by Barrisoni enforced by Sergeant Butchie Baker about chalking and the sleeping ban on the sidewalk. The struggle continues.
Hi, my name is Sandy Brown, and I live on the west side of Santa Cruz. And I want to thank the mayor and council members for providing this opportunity for me to come here and tell you all again that I really support repealing the sleeping sections of the camping ban. And I'm glad I'm here, and I'm glad that we're talking about this. I think that you all, we need to go further. We all need to go further than this. And I have some ideas, and these are not ideas that just came from me. They came from a lot of people. And because it doesn't seem to me that repealing the sleeping sections of the camping ban altogether is on the table right now, tonight, I want to talk about some of these, and I'll just read through them quickly. And I apologize, I only have one copy. I didn't come prepared, and I should have brought additional copies, but I'll tell you that we'll get a copy. Okay. These are in addition to the recommendations that are on the table. The first one is under section 6.36010D, and I'm not going to read all the sections. I'm just going to go through and try to paraphrase. Bedding shall not include sleeping bags, blankets, temporary coverings, except that such material shall be no more than what can be carried about by a single person. Camping permitted where city council declares an emergency for reasons of public health and safety. During such emergencies, the requirements of section 6.36030 may be suspended by the council. Penalty, and I think this is a really important one. Any person who violates any section of this chapter is guilty of an infraction and shall be subject to a fine of not more than $10. That's reasonable. And this is the really important part to me. Penalty, subsequent offenses within 24 hours, except that violations shall only be charged as infractions. I really don't think that, you know, sleep crimes rise to the level of misdemeanor. Additionally, no citation shall be issued for a violation of sections unless the police dispatcher has been informed by county shelters that emergency shelter space is not available. And I think that this is something that should happen year-round. It would be consistent with the ICORN decision to make it year-round and not just during the winter. Additionally, there's a couple additional resolutions here. The city attorney shall be directed to dismiss citations under the section, the two sections issued prior to passage of the current changes. I support the notion of having task forces, an additional task force preventing homelessness, dealing with evictions, rent control, those kinds of issues, I think, is really important and should be formed. And that one of the two homeless task forces shall report back no later than 2 months on amending the camping ordinance and related ordinances to make violations part of a civil administrative process instead of criminally punishable. I'll pass these in. I just want to add, I want to take issue, and I don't mean to be disrespectful when I say this, I want to take issue with the notion that this is some orchestrated thing that's happening here tonight. and that we've all have organized ourselves. And I really think this is a lot of people coming down here because they feel that it's ethical. And this is grassroots politics. This is participatory democracy. It's not an orchestrated thing. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that was activist Sandy Brown, who was once, for my money, a very good activist, and since, regrettably, things have changed, but she actually, I think she got more enmeshed with the political structure, and that was, for me, her downfall. She was always, I guess she was the co-chair of SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network, for a while. The next year, she was appointed to the Citizens Police Review Board, or RARA Board, by Christopher Crone, and then began missing meeting after meeting and stopped holding public meetings. She's a woman who likes to have a number of different things going on, a number of task forces and so forth, and at one time seemed to be groomed for running for city council, and one wonders if, in fact, those political aspirations weren't uppermost. She sold out the Dolphin Lee tenants. She acquiesced in meetings in private homes of the SCAN steering committee. She essentially acquiesced in rigging the ballot of the SCAN elections in 2000. And again, I guess the elections this last year were too good. I don't know if she was involved because I wasn't in that meeting. It's a sad situation for Sandy Brown, who is an articulate woman and has been an activist in many causes. And as you can hear, is a strong advocate as of 1999. For ending the sleeping ban, but of course after that she became less and less of an advocate, and SCAN, deciding that they couldn't get council to move on this, just didn't want to offend and use up their quote political capital. So I generally take an opportunity to call Sandy Brown out whenever I see her in public places on this issue, because I feel her actions have resulted in the essentially the uprooting of the majority of Hispanic families in the Beach Flats who did once live in the Dolphin Lee and Rex Court apartments. And it's a sad thing to say, but it's also an even sadder thing to see done.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is James May. I really think that it's nice to see you here making some attempt to make some changes. We've seen no changes in the past. I do think that the changes aren't enough. Specifically, the time periods. Sleep is sleep no matter what time it is. 2 a.m. to 6, 2 a.m. to 4, it's still sleep, okay? You speak of people in cars and you make these things businesses that private drivers, well, these people are homeless, okay? How many people do they have that have a home? Okay, no, that's not even the issue. So the issue here is a place for them to park, but they're not in neighborhoods, but they're not upsetting residential neighborhoods. Okay, it's not a hard thing to do. It can be done. It takes a little bit of perseverance and a little bit of care. Okay, I'd like to speak to the armory issue. In there that says that the armory is full, at those times tickets will be. Well, what about the case of issuances where people have been put out by the armory because you have an armory staff that is run in the dictates of that staff? Okay, there's very much a case of whether you're liked or disliked, whether you go to the armory or not. And I can state this for a fact. Last night they put a 13-year-old boy out, okay, because Miss Donna Williams, Sugar as she's known to everyone, and Papa John didn't like him. Okay, he had never been 86. He was not on any 86 list. Okay, but he went up there and he was gratefully accepted up there, and then put out because, and exactly stated, they don't like him. Okay, this is everyday business at the armory. What are you going to do for these people? Okay, for the mentally handicapped that occasionally have their fits or fight their little demons. Whether they may not be harming anyone, but they don't like that type of behavior. You act like that, you get put out. You get police called on you, you get slammed on the ground. Female, slammed on the ground. Her problem is she has a mental problem, okay? She was treated so badly at this armory, slammed on the ground, handcuffed and hauled away in front of everyone. And this is what they see. Well, if you complain about the manager, your target. If you go in and put in a complaint about Donna Williams, you get 3 to 5 days out. Nothing is ever done. This woman was fired at one point for stealing monetary donations. Why is she our armory manager? Why do people like this continue to be allowed to deal with the homeless? We have to put people who have compassion, who care, and a little bit of knowledge. Okay? I thank you very much for tonight, and I ask you to please look in your hearts, all of you, and realize that the homeless issue is an important issue, and it's one that needs to be taken care of now. Not 6 months down the road, not a year, not even 3 weeks from now, but now. We need to do something for these people, especially the ones that are trying. Thank you all very much.
That was activist James Ney, who the next year was arrested and handcuffed and taken to jail for chalking on the sidewalk. Something like the sleeping ban is a human rights violation near Alibaba's cafe on complaint of Ali Ka, the man who was privatizing the sidewalk downtown along with Matisse Selman and the Downtown Association. James Ney was also arrested at City Council for trying to claim his oral communications time by Mayor Sugar the next year. And he was involved in a lawsuit with the city around the chalking issue, which he essentially settled because of some court decisions which make it more difficult to claim the right to chalk on the sidewalk, but which many of us still claim and still do. James is still in the area. For a long time he ran a pizza shop up in Felton and continued to employ homeless people and come down and agitate and organize around these homeless issues. He's struggling now, as many of us are, for survival as economic times turn meaner. You're listening to the 1999 debate on minor changes by the Byers, Crone, Sugar Task Force to examine the camping ordinance amendments. It came back and eventually resulted in the changes that allowed 2 vehicles to a business parking lot, 3 nights per month in a residential backyard, lowered the fine to $54, allowed for dismissing tickets if the armory were full, but not if the armory were closed, and made the sleeping ban an infraction rather than a misdemeanor, which had the kind of the double effect of it denied the defendant access to a public defender, and it made it something that couldn't be tried by a jury, although it did make it a lesser crime. And there may have been a few other changes, minor changes as well, that slipped my mind at the moment. The debate went on. We're hearing the debate because the situation has come up again at City Council, as City Council has made the camping ban worse. It is now ruled that 3 days per month in a side yard and backyard is all you get, something never intended in the original ordinance back in 1978, not on the books until a recent interpretation by John Barisone at the City Council meeting, or shortly before, on January 22nd. Interesting stuff. That's why we're examining it. We're going to be talking more about it. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. If you want to call in and comment on any of this stuff, please do, 427-3772.
Hello, my name is Douglas Cronin. I'm a co-owner of a student-run restaurant up on campus. We were visited by the city council, a few members of the city council the other night. I appreciate you coming up for that. Let me tell you, I think the students are getting very in tune with this issue, getting very concerned. I've seen a lot of students here tonight. I think they're getting organized. I wanted to come up here a little bit to talk about a community that I don't think is talked about too much in these discussions, and that's a little bit of a selfish interest here. I've lived for 2 years in this community, what would be considered homeless conditions. It's hard for me sometimes to consider, like, when do you stop being homeless and when you start being, like, a home person, you know what I mean? Like, what's the difference between the two? Is it just a state of mind? Is it like, you know, actually owning a home or something? I don't even, at this point, do I consider myself homeless or not? I don't know. But I would like to stand up for people who, I know I like to travel during the summer. I don't have a lot of money. You know, I like to travel cheap. I like to hitchhike, you know, other ways of getting around. But I don't have the money to go to the motel, don't always know people in another town, don't have a car to sleep in. What do people do that are in those situations? I think those people are being excluded from coming here to Santa Cruz. That there's no, like, where are they going to go? And I think opening up some beach areas, you know, even local people can come and, you know, we can go down and we can have a fire and we can, you know, sleep under the stars. I don't see anything wrong with that. Anyway, I would encourage you to definitely take some strong action on this.
Thank you.
And that was student activist and, I guess, student pizza place co-manager or owner Doug Cronin, who was the next year taken to court for violating the sleeping ban or the camping ban. I guess it was the camping ban section of the camping ordinance for visiting someone else's tent on campus. The campus, of course, is a large green area where there are up to 40 or 50 or more homeless students. The number has increased, and we're going to hear an interview actually about that after this whole discussion on the camping ordinance. And Doug went to court to fight that, claiming he was visiting a campsite, and there was no evidence it was his campsite. And Judge Danner, formerly District Attorney Art Drumhead Danner, now judge, simply dismissed it out of hand and convicted him.